another way that I've set my life up on purpose to help me stay in state and feel the way that I want to feel is I try as best as I can to delegate all of my domestic duties. Because I feel really resentful when I have to.
Amen.
It's my goal in life, actually, to delegate every possible domestic duty.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Today's interview was a real pleasure for me. I had the opportunity to sit down with someone not only that I admire, but someone I also consider a friend. Lori Kennedy is a holistic nutritionist by background and has gone on to build an online business where she teaches other practitioners how to scale their impact and their message in the online space. What's remarkable to me is not necessarily the business that Lori has built, but the life she has built. I think far too often we sit back and we envy what other people have. And what Lori has done is she has gone out and she has built her life on purpose. We have all sorts of rules and constraints about how we are supposed to do it. And one of the things that I admire most about her is she looks at those items, she evaluates them, and then she decides which ones are going to work for her and which ones she needs to be malleable with, which ones she needs to work around in order to have the life and the existence and the impact that she has always dreamed of. Today's podcast is all about understanding how to do that for yourself, how to give yourself permission to take your life and your impact and your purpose to the next level. You know, one of the things that keeps coming up with all of our podcasts is you can't wait to be tapped on the shoulder. Sometimes you just have to pick up the opportunities that are standing in front of you. We get into detail about how to do this, how to recognize it, and how to be okay with it as we build a life of intention, as we build our life on purpose. It is my pleasure to introduce Lori Kennedy. Lori Kennedy, it is such a pleasure to have you. Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
Well, we have so many things to get into today, but here's the deal. You are my kind of woman. You are a badass. You are a woman on a mission. Who is Lori Kennedy and how did she get here?
You know, it's really funny that you asked that because I feel like over the last couple of years, I've been asking myself that, and I've also been wanting to just revert back to just being Lori. So taking away like the title of mom or business coach or whatever. So who am I? I would say first and foremost, I'm a mom because that's my primary responsibility. My professional title used to be registered holistic nutritionist. And that sort of morphed into, I guess you could call me a business coach, although I don't really identify with that. It doesn't feel comfortable to me. I think I'm a writer and I am an empowerer of, first and foremost, women. I think that feels like the best two titles for me, to be a writer and an empowerer, because I've been through a lot of stuff. I've grown a business. I've grown many businesses, actually. And I think the best way for me to live up to my own potential is really just to write about it. And then hopefully that will empower other women and men, but mostly women, to follow suit, really. And that's, I think at the end of the day, I'm just a girl. I'm just a girl.
I love that you're willing to say, though, live up to my own potential, because I feel so often we kind of throw around this dialogue of, well, everyone says, you know, I could live up to my potential, but you're like, you are fully owning it. That's one of the things I love about you. What is it that you've really had to own so that you can go back to being just Lori?
Well, the just Lori part, it's an interesting journey, I think, that most people don't even realize that they're in for when they decide to become an entrepreneur. No one really explained to me in a way that I could even grasp, because I don't think that you can fully even comprehend what the journey is until you actually go through it. But no one explained to me that in order to get to where I want to go, the hardest work is going to have to be on myself with a capital S. And so the Lori that began this journey back in 2007, 10 years ago, which is crazy, and the Lori that I am now, I mean, my core values and my, you know, the way that I functionally behave in the world is the same. Like, I'm impatient, you know, I'm bossy, like those things are the same, but my consciousness and my level of understanding of who I am and what I want is so much deeper, obviously, than it was when I started out. And so I just, what I had to accept in myself is the things that I actually thought were negative, like the bossiness, the ambition, the striving, the needing everything done now, and the core value of efficiency. Like those things I always assumed were bad. And so I felt really insecure about them. And I had to filter who I, you know, the way that I spoke and the way that I behaved, because I didn't want to come across as, you know, for lack of a better term, like a bossy bitch, because being bossy for a female is bad, except it's not. And so there's a way that I've learned to use those innate traits that I have in a very loving and compassionate way that still helps me get done what I need to get done. And so that I don't feel that they're actually negatives, they're quite positives for me. And I think that it's those traits that I have that have actually gotten me to where I am. And so I'm so grateful that I have them.
Well, I'm laughing as you're talking about bossy, because I remember as a kid, we had this series of books called Let's Talk About. And the only one where the spine was cracked on it was called Let's Talk About Being Bossy, which I feel like my mom read to me over and over again.
Yes.
So what was it that you went, like, what shifted for you where you went, like, I'm owning these things. I am no longer trying to pretend they aren't part of who I am, and they're part of what accelerates me. Like, what was it that shifted? Because I think there's a lot of women listening who are like, oh, I am those things, but I'm not supposed to be them, or I don't know how to own it.
Well, there was a couple of things. I think one, having a male mentor I've actually never been in a high level mastermind with a female leader, which is interesting. But I think being in a mastermind with males and having them be that way without even acknowledging that it's a thing. Mm-hmm. So really recognizing that in order to get to where you want to go, your mindset has to shift, your energy has to shift, your language has to shift, and the ownership of your responsibility and your leadership actually has to shift. And so I had a very hard time putting on my boss hat, because that equated bullying and, oh, you're so bossy, and that it was a negative thing. And so the team wasn't able to grow. My business wasn't really growing as well as I wanted it to, because I wasn't able to stand in my own power and really claim those roles without feeling bad about them. And so I learned some strategies that really helped me to, you know, toggle between the creative, who, you know, the visionary and the creative of my business, and then the driver, the boss, the CEO of my business. The first thing that I did, well, I wouldn't say the first thing, but one of the things that really helped me was the Strengths Finder test. So you can go on Amazon and you can buy the book, and it gives you a code and actually gives you your top five strengths. And interestingly, my top strength is that of an achiever. And so that for me was a huge aha, where I was like, oh, that's my strength. The fact that I'm constantly feeling this need to push boundaries, do more, you know, quote unquote, like, I guess some people were like, you're a workaholic, but it doesn't feel that way to me. Because my strength is the achiever. And so moving on to the next thing is easy for me. I don't dwell in things. I don't sit in things, good or bad, because that doesn't feel like achievement to me. And so the strength finder test was really helpful. Being in a group with lots of men and watching them function and watching them lead their teams and watching them speak and how they carried themselves and trying then to do it in a more feminine way. And I think that over the years I've gotten much better at it. So those were some of the strategies. And then also surrounding myself with really ambitious, achieving, you know, boss lady women who are also very much into spirituality and femininity, as has just happened over the last, like I would say, 2 years, has really has given me sort of both sides of the coin, the masculine and the feminine, but also unapologetically, like, how to be the CEO of your business and, you know, crack the whip when you need to in a loving and compassionate way. So those, I would say, were like the three main things that have helped me over the years, really just claim those things that I thought were negative.
So what do you see, you know, having spent some time, and I'm going to say having studied men in the space, what do you think are some of the things that we do as women that collectively hold us back? And I'm not blaming women here, because what I think happens is I think our society places expectations upon women that we internalize and enable us to hold us back. So what are some of those things?
So this is a really good question, and I'm really excited to talk about it. So I'll just speak from my own observations, having been around both high-profile men and women. So the first thing with women, especially those of us that live in Canada, and I notice this—
because that's a thing. That is actually a thing.
It's a thing, yeah. For sure. Saying sorry when you actually mean excuse me. So the example that I give is I'm at Starbucks pretty much every day, and— if I'm going to like do my coffee at the, you know, like the little stand, instead of saying, excuse me, women will say sorry. Or like if I'm grocery shopping, you know, and someone's in my way, I'll be like, oh, so sorry. Or like, sorry. But what I really mean is excuse me. And I've caught myself saying sorry so many times when there's actually nothing to be sorry for. I'm just, you know, trying to move out of someone's way or trying to move so that they don't hit me or whatever the case may be. So I think apologizing. So that's like a personal example, but then also I see this a lot in my Facebook groups for my own students, is them downgrading their accomplishments for whatever it is. And, you know, to be like, I know, you know, my email list is only at 100, and I'm like, except those are 100 people. So let's celebrate that. So really, I know there's a word for it, but it's not coming to my mind right now, but it's like shrinking their accomplishments or apologizing for asking a question. So apologizing for sure, and excusing themselves for asking certain things, versus just like men will just ask without any apology necessary. So that's one for sure. I think apologizing unnecessarily and, you know, excusing themselves for asking questions because they think that their questions are stupid. And then the other thing is, I think, the difference between men and women. And I'll just, again, this is just from my own experience, is I am jealous of the men who have children, who are married, who can freely like roam and travel for their businesses because they're a man. And this might get some backlash in what I'm saying, but I believe this to be true. I've talked to enough mothers and enough fathers in masterminds to sort of see this trend. It's easier for the men to speak and travel and be out and network than it is for the wife of the same stature in business, but she's also the mother. Because the mothers are the mothers and the fathers are the fathers, and they're just not the same. And we can debate that all day long, but in my experience, which is what I'm speaking from, it's not equal. It's not the same. And so women, I think, don't speak up enough and ask for support. And so they play this role of like martyr because it's not the same. They're not as inclined to, you know, put their foot down, set boundaries, and ask for the support that they need at home. And so I see that very much on a consistent basis with women across the board. And I've struggled with that too, like, you know, being sort of envious of my male friends who have families where they can go, you know, once or twice a month to a conference or to a networking event during the week. And it's not the same for me. And I'm sure that it could be if I chose it to be, but there's a whole level of like mom stuff that happens that I just am not sure it's on par with the way that men feel. I'm sure there are some, but I just haven't seen it be equal. And that's just in my own experience. And so not asking for help or support at home is one of the biggest ways I think that women hold themselves back, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And in all fairness, I would say that, you know, especially over the last few months, I've traveled a lot for work and for my business, and my husband has picked up all of the pieces around that. But that took us having serious conversations about how we were going to live our life with intention, and the ebbs and flows of our respective businesses. And yet I still feel this overwhelming sense of guilt and then need to swoop in and overcompensate and on all of these things that I think are very real. And I still want to have all the mom responsibilities, but then be away. Like it's complicated because it's so entrenched in our identity. Yep. In terms of how we wear all of these hats. But I want to use that because I think this is a great example of you know, we're all challenged in different ways about building our life on purpose. What have you done? I know you've made some big shifts in your life and in the decisions and how you run your business over the last few years so that you can live on purpose. Can you give us an example of how that works in your own world?
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing that I'll say is about that is it took me actually being around other like-minded people to even have the awareness that that was a thing, that I could create my life on purpose. And so if you're not in that space yet where it's like fully entrenched in you, that's okay. It took me a while to get there. So the first thing that I did was I really decided, you know, what my vision for my business and my life would look like, because to me, there's no separation between church and state. I am my business. My business is my livelihood, and it's very much a part of my life. And I can't separate them. And I don't want to, because that doesn't make me feel good. So I had to come up with a vision for the way that I wanted my business and my life to look and to feel. And I place a lot of emphasis on how I want to feel on a regular basis because it's everything. When you feel the way that you want to feel, you're in the zone, you're aligned, you're in a really good state of mind. And because I have, you know, some pretty heavy, awesome responsibilities, children, single parenting, running a business, you know, I have to make sure that I feel good most of the time. Otherwise, I'm a really crappy mom. I'm a crappy boss. And I just don't, I mean, no one likes to feel crappy. And so I decided that I could make some really positive shifts in my life to help keep me feeling the way that I want to feel. And it's very obvious when we slip out of state, right? Like when we are going down a path and you start to feel overly anxious, or your cravings are triggered, or you're tired, or you're much more snappy and don't have a lot of patience. I'm very aware of when I'm out of state, when I'm out of feeling the way that I want to feel. And so it first came down to me actually picking adjectives. Like, I want to feel calm. I want to feel in the flow. One of my core values is efficiency. So for me, when I don't feel like my life or my business is running efficiently, that really agitates me. And I had to look at all of the things that I need to do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And for me, what I learned is structure equals freedom. So the more anal retentive, literally, and obsessive I can be with my time, the calmer, the more in flow, the easier it is to be in my life, to live my life on a daily basis, given all of the moving parts that I, you know, I have to make sure happen on a regular basis. And so I looked at my schedule. I looked at my responsibilities from like a parental, you know, social person, and then my business. But then I also really spent a lot of time, and I still do, figuring out how I function best. So my entire life right now, as much as humanly possible, is set up to help me function in the most optimal way. And with that comes concessions and sacrifices. What I mean by that is I love my children dearly, but my mornings need to be kept as calm and as decision-free as humanly possible so that I can stay in a state of flow and creativity to get the work done that I need to get done. So that means for me that my kids go to a before school program so that they're not home and awake for 2 hours before I actually have to drop them at school. Because if that's how my day started every day, it wouldn't be healthy for me or for them. And so that was a decision that we made, is to put them into this program so that I could have time in the morning to do what I needed to do. Another way that I've set my life up on purpose to help me stay in state and feel the way that I want to feel is I try as best as I can to delegate all of my domestic duties, because I feel really resentful when I have to.
Amen.
It's my goal in life, actually, to delegate every possible domestic duty, because my time is very limited and I feel resentful when I have to do certain things that I know that I could pay someone else who would be only too happy to do it. And so I, you know, decided that I was going to do my best, obviously given a budget, you know, to outsource and delegate a lot of the domestic stuff that costs me time, because that's time I can't get back. And then I feel frustrated. And so my whole goal is to stay in state and feel the way that I want to feel. And so because my time is super limited, delegating certain things like having someone come and clean my house, having someone mow my lawn, shovel my snow. I'm also a single mom, so like my time is even less now. So delegating domestic duties is huge for me. And then also things around nutrition too, like, you know, making things around nutrition for me as simple as humanly possible, and accepting who I am in the sense that I don't like to cook at all. If I never had to cook a meal again, I'd be very happy about that, except I have 2 kids. And so making meals as simple as possible. And this year, especially because my son just started his, you know, hockey, which is like 4 or 5 times a week. My daughter goes to gymnastics 3 times a week. And I work out, I have body fat goals. I need to eat a certain number of calories every day in order to feel good. Because if I undereat, I don't feel good. So my concession was, you know what? I'm just going to go out and buy boxes of bars, because I am not the person who's going to be carrying around a cooler of food from, you know, 4 until 9 p.m. when I'm being mom running to arena and gymnastics place. And so making those decisions as easy as possible for myself without that guilt of, ugh, I'm a nutritionist, so I really should be, you know, prepping my snacks and making bars and making muffins and cookies. I'm just not going to do it. And so instead of placing that guilt, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to release all of this and take the path of least resistance. And this is going to feel really good for me, because I can just throw some stuff in my bag Not to say that that's going to be an everyday thing, but it'll be a mostly everyday thing because that's going to help me make sure that I get my food, I'm fed, and it doesn't stress me out. Like, oh man, I don't have veggies to cut up and nuts to take and prepping all of that. Like, it's just the path of least resistance. So those are some of the ways that I've been able to set my life up on purpose so that I can make sure that I feel the way that I want to feel without the guilt, without the stress, and without the anxiety, given the fact that there's a lot of moving parts in my life.
But Lori, don't you care about what people think of you?
You know what? It's a really good question. And it's a good question. Yes, I do. Of course I do. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'm the one that feels like a horrible mom because I'm hungry and I'm tired and I'm irritated because I didn't get my work done. And so if someone else laid judgment on me and could also carry those feelings, then maybe I'd care a little more. But no one else carries those feelings except me.
People are going to judge you
no matter
what, things you least expect.
Yeah.
So you might as well live the life you want to live.
And to add on to that, I really actually like going against the grain because I feel like a lot of people, especially in the health and wellness sphere, are like living these dirty little secrets that they eat protein bars for dinner. And it's actually not a dirty little secret. Like, this is how we function in the real world. I don't know how, you know, common it is to like make every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner from scratch when your kids are competitive athletes and you run a business, you work full time, you have a house to keep up. Like, it's just not realistic, in my opinion. It's not realistic for me. And so by me sharing this stuff, like, I hope those of you listening can breathe a sigh of relief because you got to make some quote unquote concessions, although they're not really concessions. They're just putting strategies in place to help you live your life with calmness and ease and simplicity and efficiency because that reduces stress. And anytime you can reduce stress, everybody wins.
Well, and I love what you're saying because you're basically just carte blanching permission for people to build what they want to build. And it reminded me on the weekend, I showed up at our neighbor's cottage and we had had aspirations of coming up a week earlier and they were staying up for the summer. And I opened with, oh, I'm so sorry we didn't make it up sooner. We just couldn't make it happen this week. And she is the CEO of a publicly traded mining company and she's pretty badass herself. And she just looked at me and she was like, Megan, like, we all just have to do what works best for our lives. No sweat. And we carried on. And I was like, in that moment, I was like, you are so effective at what you do because you just don't give a shit about what other people think. And not in a self-centered, self-righteous way, but in a, like, at the end of the day, you got to live your life. And I love that about what you are saying, because that's ultimately the truth. You know, one of the things you talked about that I was kind of picking up on, and part of it is, I think I did a podcast earlier, recorded it earlier today, and we talked about the entrepreneurial personality type and our need for continuous momentum. Mm-hmm. And that was something I heard in what you were saying. It's about efficiency. It's about flow. I've got to keep it rolling.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when I look at your journey in your own business, you started working one-on-one with clients and it evolved from there. Was the need for efficiency and that need for continuous flow, was that part of the evolution of your business as well?
Oh, for sure. And I didn't recognize that that was like an entrenched core value for a really long time. And one of the things that I discovered was that it actually stressed me out and made me feel anxious, and that like I wasn't living up to my, you know, the standards that I have set for myself is when I wasn't working, or I wasn't being productive, or I wasn't doing something that felt like momentum. So when I was out of momentum, like when my schedule gets messed up in the summer because kids are at camp and we take vacation and all of that stuff, that actually causes me stress and gives me anxiety because we're not in the flow, because it's disrupted. My momentum is disrupted, right? My momentum is disrupted during the Christmas holidays because my kids are not in school and there's holidays and there's New Year's, the momentum is disrupted. And that feels stressful to me. Not to say that I don't know how to chill, because I do. And that's not to say that I have to work 24 hours. I like the feeling of momentum. I think as entrepreneurs, we thrive off of momentum and building and creating and having ideas and visioning. And when we're not able to do that because, for whatever reason, because life gets in the way, that actually feels stressful to us. Like, I have my best days when I'm completely in the flow. And I know that I'm creating momentum in my business and my life. So when I'm outside of that feeling, that's what actually feels stressful to me, which is a very interesting tie-in to being able to set your life up in that way on purpose, so that you're in the flow and you're constantly in momentum in one way or another, whether it's personal or professional.
So how do you recommend people find this in their own business or in their own endeavor in their world? I know you work a lot with practitioners who are transitioning from working one-on-one with people to driving scale and driving efficiency with respect to how they practice or how they work. What is the first step in terms of making that happen, in terms of getting outside the box and thinking about it a different way?
I really do think, and this is something that we teach in the Wellness Business Academy, it really does start with your home life. Like, it, in my opinion, especially if you have dependents, whether they're parents or children or whatever, I think that you have to get your personal affairs and your personal environment in order, like in terms of structuring your days, getting the help that you need, creating boundaries, having that conversation with your whoever is in your immediate family, like getting them to buy into the vision so that you have the physical space, but also the mental capacity to even dream up the business. Because if you're so bogged down in the personal life, you won't have the capacity, the energy to actually dream up and build that momentum in your business. So if you're wanting to go full force and just drive that business forward, I would actually start by looking at your own personal life, your habits, your nutrition, your morning time, your morning routine, and making sure that you have a really solid foundation for growth. Because let me tell you, when your business grows and your personal life is not in order, it's really hard. It takes a huge toll. Like you said, even just being able to travel and the conversations you had to have with your husband around that. So setting up your personal life for success, your personal habits, your personal schedule, I think would be the first step. And then the second step is really to pay attention to how you innately function in the world. So there's a test called the Kolby test. It's K-O-L-B-Y. I think it's a $50 test. It's not a personality test. It teaches you how you innately function. So for me, I am a quick start. So I have ideas and I want them implemented now. I am not someone who checks over my work. I am not someone who even thinks twice about it. I launch imperfectly every time. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. That's how I innately function. And so knowing that that's how I function, I needed people to pick up the slack where I was lacking. So doing that test really helps you to see the people that you need on your team, the support that you need at home, for you to really be able to dive in instinctually and grow your business that way. So those would be the two things that I would say do first. So that you can create that momentum. Because if you're someone, for example, who's really into details, you're going to have a problem implementing. So you need someone who's more of a quick start, who can take what you're creating and implement it for you so that you can, you know, not get so bogged down in the details. And a year later, you're still planning and organizing and strategizing, for example.
Yeah, no, I think this is why I resonate with you so well, because I too am a quick start. And fortunately, my mom reaches out to me every time I post something on Facebook to tell me where my spelling mistakes reside. So,
totally.
Right? Yep, we need these people around us.
Yeah.
Have your kids done the Kolby test?
They have not. I've done the love languages stuff with them. But they haven't done the Colby. I know my daughter for sure is a quick start, which has been a really interesting thing to navigate with her teacher, because she will not check over her work. And she's a creative quick start. So every letter will be in a different color pencil crayon. But she won't check over her work. So that's interesting. And my son's just going into grade one. So we'll see how this year fares with him. But for sure, she's a quick start, which will be very interesting to navigate elementary school.
Yeah, but like that's, you know, some of the most brilliant people in the world, the common story is that, man, school is a struggle because there was this box I was supposed to be in, and that wasn't my natural inclination to hang out in that box. Right. How do you, because you've done so much personal work and you're so conscious of these elements, how does that factor into how you parent?
It 100% factors into how I parent in terms of gratitude. And, you know, my kids, even we just this year, we're implementing like morning magic time for them and morning routines, and just compassion. But also because I understand how I function best and I'm aware of it in my kids, I can advocate for them and I can teach them to advocate for themselves, which I think is the biggest thing. Like, my children are outgoing, and they've learned how to ask for things on their own. So even, for example, like my six-year-old, he will order for himself at a restaurant. He will ask for things that he needs at a restaurant. He can inquire about things. He can go up to strangers and ask for certain things. Like, I've really tried to advocate to teach them how to speak up and use their voice versus, you know, feeling shy or whatever it is that they, you know, would normally feel, I guess, as a kid, being in an adult world, especially my daughter, being able to advocate for herself and even just, you know, voicing her feelings and really giving her the language to use to speak to her friends when her feelings feel hurt, or, you know, how to speak to either one of us, like myself or her dad or her brother. She's still a normal kid. They fight, they hit, whatever. But it's been interesting to see her navigate her friends, in the sense of wanting to actually talk it out with them and share how she was feeling so that she could validate how she was feeling and how the other kids were feeling. So that's been super interesting. And just teaching them to have their own awarenesses, like when they feel anxious, you know, to be able to label their feelings, I think has been huge for them, especially my son, who definitely has my anxiety tendencies, and just being able to really acknowledge how they're feeling and understand that it's energy and that they need to get it out of their bodies.
Yeah, it's such a great point. The language piece is so important, giving them those tools to be able to articulate what's going on in their bodies. Lori, what do you want your legacy to be?
You know, when you gave me that question, I think for me, I'm building it now. I'm going to cry. So it's like, my legacy is already happening when women in my group post that they've been able to quit their jobs, you know, when they've been able to pay for their family vacations, when they've been able to advocate for themselves, you know, and speak up, you know, for their spouses and ask for support. I think my legacy is walking my talk, is being the example of an open book, you know, like giving women specifically permission to dream up this larger than life, you know, business and have these amazing visions and realize that the only thing that's standing between them and success is the decision to do so. And as long as these things keep happening, as long as I'm able to keep sharing and my community keeps taking action, I think that, you know, that will serve me well. That will serve me well. And I love knowing that I'll be a part of these women's stories, you know, when they think back to like how their careers got started and the decisions that they made and all of that stuff, like they will think of me. And I think that's such an honor. And, you know, that makes me super happy.
I love that. How would you define health?
What's coming to me right now is just the path of least resistance. I think that we've made health way too complicated. And I think consistency actually is how I would define health. Just being consistent with whatever it is that you do that makes you feel the absolute best.
Minus Oreo cookies?
I mean, man, if those Oreo cookies make you feel good sometimes, like, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I am not one to judge about that kind of stuff.
You threw sometimes in there. So that'll be the caveat that we hold on to. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. I think this is a perfect place to transition to the second part of the interview. And I call this our KPIs, so key performance indicators. So just like we would have these for our business and assessing the health of our business, I believe that we also have them with respect to our lives. So these are a series of what I will call rapid fire questions that'll give us a little bit of a sense in terms of who you are and what goes on behind the scenes.
Love it.
So the first question is, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
Absolutely. I live and die by my morning routine, and I'm pretty sure it's what kept me sane. I wake up at 5 a.m., I pee, I have coffee, I sit down, I write until 7. From 7 to 8, I am a mom. From 8 to 8:30, 8:45, I walk. And then I go back to writing until about 10:30 or 11, which is when people can start asking me questions and bothering me.
I love it. It's so important, right? The consistency to that morning routine. And just comment on this, because I know you've posted about this before. When you're on vacation, what happens to your morning routine?
I still wake up. I won't usually set an alarm, like on the weekends and stuff, unless I have work that I need to get done. I won't set an alarm, but my body is so programmed, because I've been doing this literally since 2012. My body is so programmed, so it doesn't really matter what time I go to bed at this point. I will wake up between 5 and 6. I really enjoy my morning routine. I need to start my day for myself, not with my kids. I love them, but that is my meditation. It's coffee and writing. I start my day in the flow. I do something to nurture my creativity and to drive my business forward. So I start my day in momentum. And if I don't do that, it's like I'm chasing the day, and I don't like that feeling.
Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
I always get these confused. I think I'm reading a nonfiction book. It's called, what is it called? Reveal, maybe? It's just about like womanhood and spirituality and goddesses.
Oh, you know, just so, spirituality, womanhood, and goddesses.
Yeah.
Typical, Lori, typical. Yeah. What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
I would say the workouts over the last year and a bit, I've been pretty consistent with the workouts. Like, even if I had to take a week or two off just for whatever reason, I've come back to it, which is a new thing for me. And then also just making sure that I get enough energy in the form of food in a day, because when I don't eat enough, I don't feel good.
What do you do for fun or play?
Dance. We have lots of dance parties. I love karaoke. I am the worst singer, cannot carry a tune, and I will belt it like it's nobody's business. So much fun.
Amazing. Last question for you. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think we're born this way. I think that there's something inside of us where we're just either ignorant or naive or risk averse to all of the things. And this I'm saying with deep respect, I don't have the fear or the reluctance that most people do when they're first starting their businesses. And I do think that that's what sets the successful entrepreneurs apart from those people who are trying and working so hard and not really getting anywhere. Fear and, you know, perfectionism, they don't factor into my thought process. I just do it. And I learn the lessons I need to learn, and I do it again. So I think that there's something innate in us that allows us to sort of bypass all of those feelings and just go.
Yeah, I love the honesty in that answer. This is one of the most fascinating questions I ask of people. Laura, you are up to some really incredible stuff. I know you have some really neat things that are in the pipeline for later in the fall. Give us a brief synopsis of what you're up to and where people can find out about what you're doing.
So people can find out about what I'm doing at www.thewellnessbusinesshub.com. We recently just actually launched a certification program that centers around metabolic syndrome, because we saw that there was a massive gap in the Western medical community, specifically around nutrition and lifestyle change. And the stats for metabolic syndrome were so sad and disheartening that we felt like we could really support the alternative health practitioners in supporting the medical community. So that's something that we recently just launched. And we have all of our business trainings and our live event that we hold once a year. So if you go to thewellnessbusinesshub.com, you'll be able to find out all about everything that we have.
That's amazing. And we'll have this and all of the other resources that you have available for people in our show notes after this interview. Lori, it was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us today.
Such a good time. Thanks, Megan.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.